We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores, the games every day.
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined by Mike, no Darius today. And these Eastern Conference Finals, we had what might be a decisive Game 5 win from the Boston Celtics last night. And this series, and really the conference finals in both conferences, have had a very strange personality. The last game where we had a one-possession game within the last minute of the game was Game 5 of Boston versus Milwaukee in the last round. We've had a ton of blowouts, and in this Eastern Conference Finals in particular, they've had a strange personality of their own, in that in Miami's wins, it's been these short bursts of just absolute dominance and then trying to hold on for the rest of the game after getting a 20-point lead, of which the winning team in all five games has had a 20-point lead at some point. That's just crazy. And then in the Boston wins, Boston has been pretty dominant from wire to wire in their wins. And Mike, so coming into this Game 5, we both thought, all right, this is the game where both teams kind of are at an even desperation level, and we're going to see both of them clash. And we did in the first half. This series has been, up till Game 5, a higher scoring series than I anticipated it being. But that first half was more of that rock fight, right? Miami was up 42-37. And then in the third quarter, Udoka makes an adjustment, takes Robert Williams out of the starting group and puts Grant Williams in instead. So they're a little more mobile. They can space the floor a little better. And that really opens up their offense. And I thought we saw that initial clash, Mike, in that first half. And then Boston kind of broke them down. Now, I've got some thoughts on shot making and things like that, but I'm curious, what did you see? Because I agreed with your perspective that this was going to be the game where we saw both teams really show up. And I thought they did at first.
The most simple way that I think about a playoff game like this, and if you take out all of the stuff we're going to get into and where guys are on the court, who's available, which coach is doing what, matchups, etc., it's just the whichever team kind of takes the steering wheel is the better team usually. In this, however it happens, right? There are exceptions to this. Sometimes a guy gets a foul trouble, a guy gets an injury. But I thought that's what happened. And it was really Tatum and Brown. And it was about a 4-minute stretch of the end of the third quarter, because Miami actually goes into the third quarter with a 5-point lead. And I wasn't quite sure how they had built it. And when I say that, I guess that's not true. This is that thing that you've been talking about all season with Miami. They're smart, you know. They just know, they find ways to play good basketball and to get the other team out of what it wants to do. But I always felt like this Boston run was going to come. And at a certain point, Miami just couldn't stick with it. And it goes from 58-59. Miami's down one with 2:44 left. And by the end of the quarter, they're down by 11.
Wow.
And
yeah.
It was a flurry. Like, it was some threes. It was Jaylen Brown from the perimeter. Derek White made a play. Tatum finally got into the lane and got a floater to go. And then you have the three-pointers. The final bucket from Brown, this nice lofted jumper. And then the start of the fourth quarter, that you see those threes when there were just breakdowns in the Miami defense. And Spo actually talked about it, Pete, in his start of fourth quarter interview, where I think that it started to get deflating that Miami is just having so much trouble scoring, and they finally lost some of that focus on the defensive end. And that's kind of what I mean by it. At some point, like, that was going to – the difficulty that Miami had of just being able to score and run offense on a locked-in Boston defense was going to play out on the other end at some point. So that's part of what I thought happened and why Boston was able to carry away with it.
My one pushback on that is Miami got a lot of open shots, right? If you rewatch the shots that Strus took, that Lowry took, they are a lot of Mike Breen. Strus wide open for three, in part because they're dropping fairly deep, Boston was. And so they're conceding these shots where it's like, you kind of got to hit. They went, what, 0 for 14, 0 for 15 between Lowry and Strus? And so I think the fact that, like, a Boston run offensively was always going to come at some point. I think the fact that Miami could not answer that in kind, especially with their starters. Jimmy missed a ton of layups. He airballed like an 8-footer, missed a ton of like decent mid-range looks that he's usually good at. And so there's just a certain element of shot making. Like, there's a version of Boston's defense where they flatten you out and you're dribbling around like a chicken with your head cut off and can't get up a good shot and you gotta chuck something up with 3 seconds. But with the starters in particular, that wasn't that. But with the bench unit, with those, I call it the wraparound, the last couple minutes of the first quarter, first couple minutes of the second quarter, same as the third and fourth, that's where those are the periods of the game where, oh, they are flattening Miami out. They aren't getting any good shots. But I thought it was their starters, Mike, like just three guys between Jimmy, Strus, and Lowry that just couldn't hit shots that they normally hit.
So this is where, without Darius here to try to slide in and be Switzerland, right? I'll just go right back at your point. And when I'm watching a game, I've always hated, and I think I ranted on this a couple months ago, this whole make or miss thing. Like, why are guys missing open shots? You know, why? It's typically against a team that's got more talent or that is really good defensively. And those guys' legs, for example, Max Strus, sure, who's carried a huge load and never played this much basketball probably in his life, especially at this high of a level. We know that Lowry's got his own excuse because of the hampered hamstring, and he's just not been healthy. So that's something we've covered. Butler clearly also isn't healthy, but these are all reasons, again, why that was going to happen. And Miami can't just expect, right, that they're going to be hitting these open shots. And I think that's part of what we've seen through whatever the best team is going into a series. The other team at some point, either that other team gets puts them to the foul line a lot. And it's like, well, why is Boston going to the foul line so much? Well, because they're more athletic, and they attack the rim and you're fouling them. You know, it's like, so these things are, it's not just about, to me, the missing of open shots that's going to go in. I think that the other team is kind of forcing their will on that.
Yeah, that's certainly part of it, right? Especially, I always talk about guys, their elevator gets off at a certain floor, and at a certain point, the caliber of basketball, they're not capable of playing it. And that's one of those unseen factors, Mike, that you talk about is a guy's leg. So I think that in the case of Strus and Lowry, that's certainly part of it. But like, I'm talking about the difference between going 0 for 12 from 3 and 3 for 12 from 3, right? Like the level of shot make. Mike, they shot 15.6% from 3 on 45 attempts. Now, that 45 attempts is in part designed by Boston. Like I said, they're hanging back in the paint. They're conceding these shots. But to me, like, I grant all of that. And that to me is a explanation for why a guy might shoot 30% from 3 over the course of a series. But like, when it's that bad, Mike, like they were 0 for 12 from 3 and a lot of them were open looks, you know?
Which is why they got blown out. But let's say 4 more of those shots go in. Okay, and then they're up to like 30% or whatever. Well, are you going to give Boston a couple more shots, right? They were 10 for 33 from 3. They missed a lot of open threes. So the gap, this wasn't like a 1-point game, right? Or a 2-point game where you can say make or miss here or there. The teams are pretty much even. This to me was there's a thorough talent gap, I guess, is the way that I would put it. And even with Bam playing a little bit better, it was his best game when Robert Williams actually played. But even that, you know, 18 points in 38 minutes, and he needed 15 shots to get there, which for the type of shots that Bam takes isn't that great. So, but you're not wrong in saying this. You do, of course, expect, especially if you're, let's say you're a Miami Heat fan, you're like, dude, what are you talking about? Like, that I've seen Max Strus hit a million of these shots. And I just saw, like, the most recent example, Lakers-wise, that I could think of is last year. Whether it was KCP or Caruso or Kuzma, at a certain point, those guys just didn't have anything left in their legs. And they didn't. Yeah. And guess where that shows up the most? Shot making, and particularly from three. And that's what I'm saying. And I think Miami, in part because of Jimmy's injuries, right? In part because of Kyle Lowry's injury. So they do have that as somewhat of an excuse. But meanwhile, Boston is pretty hobbled too. Smart and Williams have been dealing with stuff. Tatum's dealing with the shoulder that he was barely able to do anything in the first half until he finally started to figure it out. So, but that's to me more of just the, that talent gap eventually weighs out. And one of the most obvious ways is the missed shots when they're open.
Yes. I think with Boston too, they have more offense on the interior. Like, they're less reliant upon their jump shooting, which is the strength of their team, right? Like, that's not something that, like, that's a check in their corner. So yeah, Boston has more on the interior and more ability to score in the paint than Miami does. And especially when Jimmy is a little banged up. That was something that's the other aspect of it to me, aside from Lowry, Strus, and just their general lack of shot making from the perimeter, is Jimmy is the guy you rely on for those tough, grimy buckets around the rim or from 12 feet and in. You know what I mean? And
yeah, buckets, you have to score inside. You have to get easy buckets because jump shots are not going to fall for a whole series.
Exactly. There are going to be games like this, certainly. And so I thought the combination of those two, it's not just the Lowry Strus going 15 or whatever they were, 0-for-12 from three. It's that as well, that Jimmy not being able to. And again, a lot of these were like, Jimmy normally makes that shot. I don't mean to take anything away from Boston's defense, which is obviously excellent. But if you watch the shots that these guys were taking, it's like, that's their shot, but you got to be able to make it. But a big part of that, I think, is kind of the injuries and their physical ability to get to the finish line was always my biggest concern with Miami. And even though several guys are playing, you can see that they just don't have all of it to give. And that's been a big part of these last couple of playoffs, Mike. So let's take a break. And when we come back, let's start talking about the Lakers and how this ties in, how the kind of attrition across the league ties into the Lakers, and it's been one of the big storylines with us. So let's take a break and come back and talk about that.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
So, Mike, how do you view this? This is something that I feel like is happening more than it used to. Maybe it's because we're just zoomed in more than we are, but the ability to make it through a season and through a playoffs to me, physically, is becoming more and more important than it ever has been before. And with the Lakers team that has LeBron going into his 20th season and AD having a couple of seasons now where he's missed a lot of time, talk to me about that idea. Like, so much of our analysis these last couple of years of what this team is has been mostly theoretical, because 80% of the time we don't have our dudes. But the ability to have those guys is something that, like, has to be the foundation of anything.
There's a lot here, Pete. So I think we'll have to pull some onion layers off as we go on here. The first thing that comes to mind is the pandemic and how much that changed the routine of the NBA and the body clock of the NBA. And just think about LeBron. He had the 8 straight finals trips, and then what ended up being 9 and 10, or was it 9? Yeah. So every single year, barring the bubble, which would kind of the start of the change of all this, right? His body just almost knows instinctively. It's kind of like if you're on a sleep schedule, and this is not a strength of mine. I am a little bit more of a random time sleeper, and sometimes it's really late, and then sometimes I get woken up early. But I know I have a couple of friends who it's like a metronome, and that really helps them with their daily flow, and their body sort of knows when, or even just the simple, like the rising and the falling of the sun. You know, there's certain things, right, that go in a nice little rhythm. And I think that for many, many years, this NBA calendar, guys have figured out how to ramp up and how to get their bodies to a certain point. And no one better historically than LeBron. He really is the number one guy there that figured that out. So then that all of a sudden that changes. And so LeBron's body has to peak in the fall of 2020. Well, hold on a sec. The next season then started in December. And that was, to me, that's the chain of events for LeBron specifically, but then extend that to the rest of the league and for guys that are not thinking about their body in that same way. And I think we can, without being too critical, throw Anthony Davis in that to an extent, where I don't know how the degree to which Anthony Davis has really mapped out in the way that LeBron did, how is my body going to get through all this? So that impacted, clearly, we talked about the bubble tax, right? So that was the Lakers and the Heat. Neither of them were able to do anything last year. That was to a secondary extent, the Nuggets and the Celtics, who got to the conference finals, and their teams kind of crashed and burned. Yeah. Now this year, a lot of people picked Milwaukee and Phoenix to get back to the finals, almost by default. I don't know if there's a team that's more talent that's played better than Phoenix. Yeah, that's going to be the finals pick. Milwaukee, they've got Giannis, but we on this pod, and I know I certainly tried to emphasize this point a lot. I was like, well, they didn't add anything to their previous year. Middleton and Holiday played in the Olympics. Like, these guys are going to run out of juice. And so that's that kind of fatigue and the difference in the body clock and all of that. I think that there's still going to be an adjustment next year, like until we finally get back on this full schedule. And so that's one thing that I think that can get better. The secondary part of this, Pete, is a point that you made that I thought was a great one. And I don't think this was before the playoffs had even started, but you were like, the regular season devaluation, and you've talked about it in terms of the play-in, you know, that's one element you brought in. But for me, it's also to do with COVID and how teams have said, well, we don't know if we're going to have X guy for a certain 2-week stint. So let's basically use this regular season to try and get into the postseason, and then we'll ramp up. And so I apologize. I'm going on and on here.
I love it. No, it's great. If I could jump in with that too, Mike, yeah, I think that exact point right there is part of the reason why I undervalued what Golden State was capable of. They came out like gangbusters to start this year, and they looked really good. And it was like, hey, Golden State is in the mix. And then I thought, seeing it with the benefit of hindsight now, they kind of ramped down a little bit after that. And they had injuries, right? You had Draymond, you had Steph, and there were certainly external factors where that second half of the year, the Warriors, they had some stretches where they're like 2-8 in their last 10 games and just not looking good at all. But then we've seen, and this series in particular with Dallas, that ramp back up. And if we have a Warriors-Celtics finals, I think that, does Golden State have the juice, or will they run out by game 5 type of thing, with kind of not older legs? They're not as old as Miami is, but Lord knows they've got a ton of miles on that. A guy like Clay coming back from just, you know, major injuries and all of that. So to your point, Mike, I think that certain team, like the regular season is somewhat of a lie, and Golden State, I think, reflects the point that you were just making there.
You know, and with that said, so round one starts, and when Phoenix starts, when Devin Booker injured his hamstring, right? And that was the time where hold on, maybe it's going to be Boston Golden State in the finals. And then I think this is the thing I got mad at myself about. Dallas comes on, right, and smacks Phoenix in game seven. And then you're thinking, well, wait a second, Golden State got pushed by Memphis. But so that's that part of it. But the place I was going to try to tie this into to start, and then we'll get to the Lakers element to this and LeBron and AD, et cetera, was this Miami series and Boston and all of the guys that are struggling to get through it physically. And why is that? You know, how many of these players were involved in that extended bubble run? How many of these guys played on Team USA? How many of them are just vets that we've seen? It's been harder on vets like Lowry and like Butler. You know, it's so a lot of this to me is tying into it. And how is that going to change moving forward in the league? It's an interesting discussion. We've got to get somebody smarter than me in here. Maybe I'll get one of my doctor buddies to pop on at some point. But that's a question to me that I think we have to think about in this series. And it's been pretty prevalent. And then the question, though, moving forward, LeBron and AD, they now have another long offseason. We thought that was going to be a big help last offseason, and it wasn't. Now, were AD's injuries fluke injuries? That's what he would say, right? LeBron's injuries are injuries that didn't used to happen to LeBron one way or the other. Even if his ankle got put in a weird position like it did in New Orleans, it somehow just his body just didn't bend there. And that's where I'm it's an open question, Pete. So what are your thoughts as you think about starting with LeBron and AD, another full offseason? So their schedule at least has gotten now back to normal, quote unquote, for not quite two full seasons. But can you talk yourself into that?
Yes, sort of. It depends on the supporting cast. I think that we really saw the downside of not having a lot of motor. I thought last season we had an extraordinary blind spot to the value of motor. And I always remember the first game of the season was against Golden State. And LeBron and AD were amazing in that game, and they had to fly around everywhere, and we still lost by like 14 or something like that. But what was apparent in that game was the degree to which LeBron and AD, that flying around and doing everything, was essential. Because like, what is Carmelo Anthony going to do that? Or like, we didn't have many guys that's kind of in their nature.
Yeah, and Russ doesn't do that. And I think that was part of the way that people understood Westbrook's game was that you were going to get more of that, right? And so then it was kind of, it stood out when it wasn't happening.
Well, we have, because there's all these reports about possibly Russ coming back. And so we're going to have plenty of conversations about Russ. But with his motor, it's like when he's the center of the universe, like, yeah, he'll push the ball up court. If he's got the ball in his hands or is asked to be the guy that drops down to grab the rebound, like, he's got a very selective motor, right?
We're talking about that role player, do everything motor, like defensively, like especially.
Yeah. And all of that. And that type of effort is necessary from all the guys, not LeBron and AD. And if Russ comes back, like if we're going to have any success at all, that has to be there more. Again, we'll have more Russ conversations down the line. But in terms of like, I think of the Lakers making it through the season. Both LeBron and AD are at points of their career where they're having difficulty doing that for different reasons. And that makes it all the more important to have guys who can step in and get you through those 82 so that you can have something like Golden State where you are able to ramp down a little bit, not go full throttle for the full 82, and then ramp back up during the playoffs. But I think we're in a different position. We'll have more difficulty doing that. Let's talk about that on the other side of the break.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
the thing about this upcoming season with the Lakers and the roster and the coach and kind of a lot of it is, what direction are we going to go in? We have this foundation of two superstars that have had injury issues, but like, what does the team look like around them? And the team around them has looked very different each of the last three seasons, especially this past one. It becomes a question of what type of players do you need to get through to the end? But the constant turnover, I think, makes that kind of not going the full 82 a lot more difficult. A team like Golden State, Mike, for the most part, those guys have played together for years under the same coach and the same system with the same teammates. So you have a little more bandwidth where you go like, hey, yeah, we got 30 games of great basketball to start the season. We can kind of, you know, ramp it down a bit, and we do what we do, and we know what we'll be able to do come playoff time. The Lakers, man, like, we don't even have an identity right now, Mike. And so that idea that we can go through a season and do that, I think, is difficult. Which means that there is going to be that demand on LeBron and AD and the role players and all of that. And so when you look at the roster, not specific players, obviously, or anything like that, but what do we need around LeBron and AD to both get through the season physically, but also be able to build something cohesive enough over the course of that 82, where I don't think we're going to have that luxury of like, oh, the second half of the season, let's just kind of chill and build back up for the playoffs.
The complicated part about this answer is, if you're expecting LeBron and AD to be playing a certain amount, then it's one type of guy. And if you're expecting the same injury luck that's happened the last year, injury, whatever, maybe it's not luck, the last 2 years, then it might tend towards another type of guy. The ideal, of course, is that you have the guys that can do both. And the two types here, I guess I should lay this out. Yeah. The one that I've been kind of advocating the most for, and the one that they used to have, is the two-way, or at least tending towards D and energy. And those guys that, if you're counting on LeBron's brain and his ability to create shots, right, and all of that as being enough on offense, and then that you have all of these other guys to do the difficult work that needs to be done throughout the course of the regular season. And then come playoff time, some of those guys maybe evolve offensively. Maybe you pick up an additional offensive piece, which to me are always easier to find at the deadline, or whatever it is. But that recipe to me, it has to be those other guys doing all the work and not just going into the season saying, week one, LeBron and AD, go dominate defensively. So that's the first part. Now, that in doing so, you might lose a few of the shot creator types, or the offensive, like they had on the team last year. And so the of course the ideal is that you have a player that can do both of those things. But if I have to pick, and usually when you're using the minimums and maybe breaking up a mid-level exception or a mini mid-level exception, you can't have it all. And that's where I tend towards more of the just get guys with motors that can do the type of work that you're just, if you have LeBron and AD do that early in the season, you're not going to get through the season no matter what happens.
Yes, absolutely. And if you look at each of the teams that are remaining, they're very serious customers on the defensive end, right? And so kind of replenishing that from a Lakers standpoint, that's also one of the types of players in the NBA that are, like, there's a few D and three types of guys that are going to hustle, play hard, and can knock down an open three with their feet set. I hope that we learn some things from the roster construction of last season, particularly with respect to motor athletes. The type of guy that you're talking about, Mike, is those D and three type of wings, especially on the defensive end, that can run the floor as well and provide energy plays. And again, just hit that three with your feet set. But that collective defense, the ability to put five on the floor that are all very serious customers on the defensive end, is one of the things that we lost that I think we can get back. But that said, I think a lot of you laid out that whole, like, if it's this way, it's one type of guy. If it's another way, it's another type of guy. To me, the big place where that hinges and the types of guys that we'll need, Russell Westbrook, and is he back? Is he somebody that's back on the team? Because if we have Russ, to me, that automatically becomes like, oh, we need somebody who could space the floor at that five spot. That's another thing I see, Mike, in these playoffs, is there's no more than one guy on the court that can't really shoot or is a well below average type of shooter. And so that idea of like athleticism and defense, but you're capable. I don't know. It's this very fine line. You know what I mean? Like, and if Russ is back, we can fall over that tipping point of not having enough shooting, where I agree with you, Mike, that it's not like the essential ultimate thing that you absolutely have to have. But if you dip below a certain Mendoza line, then you're in trouble. And I thought we did that a lot this season. So it's this very fine line between those types of players.
Well, and that's why it all goes back to Russ, though, right? And we've been trying to, we've had a lot of conversations about it, but when the number is that high in terms of what the salary is, and there's certain types of productivity that can't be counted on, that affects the ability to go out and find that because of the numbers that you have to go out in, whether it's free agency or whatever, some kind of unbalanced trade in terms of players, or like one for two or whatever that might be. So that there is no good, easy answer with that. And that's why we've been racking our brains for the last several months on it. But I just am thinking, so watching Dallas, right, since that's going to be game six, game five is going to be tonight in Golden State. And Dallas has a formula that's similar in some ways to what the Lakers have, except that the Lakers, like when they won the title, they had Anthony Davis, right? But they've got Luka, who approximates what LeBron does, certainly offensively, and then a bunch of guys super committed to their roles, good defensively for the most part. Now, they, instead of having AD as a secondary guy, they've got two smaller guards in Brunson and Dinwiddie who can come in and kind of get their own shot. So it's a different makeup and a different team there. And that, to me, lowers their ceiling. But their floor is also higher. And the players that I'm getting to are basically Finney-Smith and Bullock. And these are guys who knock down threes. But more importantly, they defend on the wing and they defend guards and slide down if need to. And those are the types of guys that the Lakers had for both of the previous two seasons. And those are the guys that are hard to get, too.
They are, but before the season, I would have never described Bullock as one of those types of guys. I think you can build a culture where you can reach guys that are kind of 50-50 or even 40-60 on the defensive end, where it's like, are they going to be a good defender or not? If you're in a culture where, like, this is what we do, this is what the coach enforces, and you play together, then you can get that out of guys that you did not expect. And so when you look at Dallas's roster, even guys like Brunson, Dinwiddie, Bullock, Bertans, these are guys that get minutes for them that I would have never been like, oh yeah, that player is going to be part of a high level defense. And so I think that they have reached a bit of their ceiling in terms of what they can do. And Golden State is capable of hitting levels like where it's like they can't quite play as well. But I do think that our next coach setting that culture, like what you can get out of even a guy like Russell Westbrook, right? And what you can get out of those types of players, there is some bandwidth there that it isn't set in stone.
Well, so it's funny, though, because before the season started, that's what we were saying about Frank Vogel, who had done that when they won the title and had gotten guys to sort of buy in. But there are certain personalities that any coach cannot get to play a certain way. And we, on the roster last year, Westbrook, Malik Monk, you know, we get to stop. But like, you can keep going for guys, Melo, that have never in their NBA lives had a certain level of NBA defensive intensity. And for Dallas, like, let's throw Bertans out, because he's clearly one of those guys that's never done it. But Luka's carrying such a large load, which has its own issues, that everyone else and Jason Kidd has enough gravitas coming in there that they really can demand at least the maximum effort there and the maximum commitment to the scheme. And whereas Luka's the one guy, this is where LeBron's better than Luka, where LeBron is an impactful defensive player. And Luka, you're just trying to get to sort of play pretty hard and not break the chain early in possessions, like what happened in Phoenix in game two, right? When all of that discussion happened. So the point, though, is that there are certain guys that I'm not expecting the new coach to come in and be able to just tell, like, as you could one of your high school players. And I'm sure there are even a couple high school kids that you couldn't get to play defense.
Yes. It's funny, even if you yell and scream,
like the yelling and screaming. I've seen this with my 7-year-olds, Pete. Some of the best teams have yeller screamer coaches because they sort of force the kids to play. But eventually that wears out and the kid quits the next year or what? It's not sustainable is the point.
And it's certainly not something you can do with grown men in the NBA.
That's why you got to bring in the guys that at least have the proclivity to do that. Right. And not get attracted to shot creation or like that just can't be prioritized to me at the same level when you already have LeBron and Andy, and especially if Russ is back.
Yeah, if you also have Russ, that means that your cup runneth over in terms of shot creation already, that in some ways it simplifies things. We just went down in the wrong direction in building the team around those three players last year, in my opinion, in terms of like, if you have that, you're going to have some weaknesses. And I agree that like the idea that you're going to get Russ to like lock in on the weak side and make his low man rotation every game for 82 games, like it's not going to happen. And that's why one of my favorite sayings and I think truths about life is like, I can't make you care. Like I'm somebody who sees the good in people and in players. And you've heard that throughout my time on the pod and all that, like, yeah, you can make it work. This is something Phil Jackson believes in quite a bit, is that idea of like, there's always a path. There's always a path to get us there. And a lot of my coverage of the team and the like, hey, this is what we need to do is comes from that perspective. But the one thing that knocks me off of that position, Mike, is when I see like, oh, you just don't really care that much. That's not something that anybody else can give to you. And if it's about the defensive end in particular, like, Russ in transition defense was something that was one of the things where watching him and I was like, and once our games got more and more important, I was like, oh, you don't really care that much about this. And that's not something anybody
care or you don't get, or you just somehow, right, don't get the importance of it somehow. Right.
And right. So I guess chicken or the egg type of exactly. thing, right? Like you don't care because you don't put that type of importance on it. And so that said, that puts a certain limit on what the Lakers will be capable of doing if he's on the team next year. But if he is, that makes everybody else that we should be, the types of players that we should be acquiring, makes it very simple. It's athletes that can defend and that can knock down an open shot. And again, that's a sliver.
Yes, we're together. We're together on this. We don't need Darius coming in the middle.
That's right.
I'm with you.
That's right. No Switzerland. We have found peace and harmony, Mike. Let's end the pod here.
Although there's one last thing, though. I forgot to just one tiny little point.
Please,
here.
Please, please, please. Yeah, yeah.
So Jonathan Goldfarb once said, no, I'm just kidding.
You had to get one in. Yes, I knew you had to get one in.
I had a whole thing, honestly, but I saw the look in your eyes when I mentioned the name. And I'll spare it to you. But, you know, I figure there's somebody out there that probably wants me to get a Goldfarb reference. And I don't know if it's Harrison, somebody like that. So, you know, there, check the box.
You'll work them in. All right. We'll go from Goldfarb to Golden State on tomorrow's pod.
There you go.
Let's see if they can close things out tonight. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double team. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two. One.
Miss it.
Unbelievable.
For the victory.
It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James. putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.